What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. Today, we're going to tackle the topic of renting a house versus owning a house. Which one's more advantageous? I see a lot of headlines that are talking about it's becoming a renter nation. It's cheaper to rent than it is to buy, but that doesn't tell the whole story. So what I want to do today is dissect the factors that come into play when you're trying to make a decision between renting and buying a house and how that's affecting today's investors.
My name is Bill Allen, and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity. And that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
So what is the difference between renting and buying a house? Well, it's pretty simple. When you're buying a house, you're actually getting a loan. You're signing up for a 30 or 15 year mortgage typically, as opposed to renting, where it's usually a 1 year commitment and it's a fixed rate. Okay, so that's important to understand. Those are two different things, and there are benefits to each one. Let's start with the interest. If you're a renter, you're on a fixed cost. You might be paying $1,500 or $2,000 or $3,000 a month in rent, but what you're not doing is you're not paying the interest payment. You're not paying the taxes and insurance. So that is a cost to the homeowner that does not belong to the renter. Now, there are obviously benefits to owning a house, and I want to dispel some rumors, okay? And I'm going to give you a personal example. I purchased a property. The rumor is, before I go into that, the rumor is that it's cheaper to rent a house than to buy a house. That depends. In some markets, like potentially the Midwest or maybe even some of the Southeast, you can rent houses for cheap, but sometimes you can buy them for cheaper. And in other markets, you can rent for cheaper than what you can purchase. And that's the case for a personal property that I own. I bought a brand new house in Florida. My principal, interest, taxes, insurance, my CDD and my HOA are almost $5,000 a month. And my renters who are in there are only paying $3,800 a month. Okay, so you know that renters don't have to pay insurance. They don't have to pay property taxes. Usually they don't have to pay the HOA and a lot of those other fees, where homeowners do have to take that into account. Now, here's the other thing. If you're an investor and you're buying a rental and you're a renter renting an investor's property, there's two other big things that are costs to the homeowner that do not apply to the renter: maintenance and repairs and capital expenditures. So maintenance and repairs are like, I open a door and I put a hole in the drywall, or the dishwasher is not working, or the garage door isn't working. And each time you send out somebody to go fix or remedy that problem, that's usually costing the homeowner a couple hundred bucks plus whatever the cost of that thing is. So if you got to replace an entire garage door, that could be thousands of dollars. But there's more, okay? That's the maintenance and repair side, the toilets and things like that. There's also the capital expenditure side. When we talk about capital expenditures, we're talking about the big ticket items that have long shelf lives. So I want you to think about the roof. Typically, if you put a roof on, it's either a 25-year roof or a 50-year roof. But the reality is that roof is eventually going to need to be replaced. The same thing goes for an HVAC system. Like an HVAC system that's providing heating and cooling to a house might last you 10 to 15 years, and those will run you $5,000 or $6,000, depending on how big the house is. A roof could run you anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000, depending on where you're at in the country and how big the house is. So you're talking about, over the life of a property, potentially having $30,000 worth of expenses. Now, I may be scaring you off from home ownership, but I'm going to give the other side of the coin on the back end of this. So maintenance and repairs and capital expenditures are typically things that a renter doesn't have to deal with, okay? But what is it, what would be the benefit to a renter? Now, rents have increased, property prices have increased. I think we have to look at the model in which an investor would buy a rental property and look to make money on it. So typically, investors look for what we call cash flow. So how do we know how much a property will cash flow? Well, we look at the difference between the income and the expenses. Now, I know you see this on the internet all the time. It says something like, hey, the rents on this are $2,000 and the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, or the mortgage payment is $1,200. Therefore, my cash flow is $800. See, that's missing a few things because we just talked about maintenance and repairs. We talked about capital expenditures as a landlord or a homeowner. And there's another thing called vacancy. Now, that doesn't mean your property is going to be vacant all year. It could just mean the tenant's lease is up in July and they want to move out. They move out on July 1st. It takes you all the way. You get your next renter on August 1st, so you have 1 month of vacancy. So if your rent was $2,000 a month, now you have 1 month out of the year or 1/12th of the year where you don't collect rents. So you might want to annualize that over the year. If it's, say, you know, maybe $1,000 in rent, then you're talking about, you know, $88 a month or something right around that number that should be calculated in that monthly cash flow. So let's go with that. Let's go with vacancy is going to be about 7 or 8% of the rent cost. So if your rent's $1,000, then you're calculating a vacancy cost for 1 month of turnover at least of about $75. Let's go with, $88 in that example. So if you have a vacancy that's, you know, costing you $70, $80, $90 a month on average when you average it out across the year. So now you have expenses that are principal, interest, taxes, insurance, minus your vacancy, which, you know, about another $100. Plus you have maintenance and repairs over the entirety of the year. And you kind of have to make an estimate of what that averages out to. A lot of times, if it's a fully rehab property or a new property, you know, you can calculate about 5% of the monthly rent to go towards maintenance and repairs. So if it's $1,000, it's $50 a month you're saving, or $600 a year just to pay for maintenance and repairs. Same thing, if you have a fully rehabbed house and you have updated capital expenditure items, like you have a brand new roof, brand new HVAC, then you might only calculate 5% for capital expenditure. So now I have principal, interest, taxes, insurance, capital expenditures. I also have maintenance and repairs, and I have vacancy. Those are the true expenses, even if some of them are projected. Okay, so on the homeowner side, if you can go to the Midwest or to the Southeast or to a market that has a good all-in price to rent ratio, price to rent ratio, which means the ratio between what I can buy it for and I'm all in with rehab and all the money I have into it compared to how much I can rent it for. So this is kind of where the 1% rule comes into play. If you've heard that term before, where you can rent the property for at least 1% of the purchase price, or the 2% rule, which is probably more applicable in today's debt environment. You need more margin to create actual net cash flow. So where we're going with this is one of the benefits of being the actual homeowner. So you might be able to find a market that can create cash flow, net cash flow, and that is a benefit of being the homeowner. Now, again, you have to deal with all the taxes, insurance, mortgage, and all that stuff, but it is still advantageous today to be a homeowner and potentially rent that property out. Okay. The other benefits that are not talked about are the same benefits you'd get from real estate. So when you own a house and you rent it out, you get to do something called depreciation. You get to depreciate that asset. So the way it works in residential real estate, and I'm not a CPA, so talk to your CPA, but the way it works in residential real estate is the items in that house depreciate over time. It means they lose their value over time. And the way it's calculated is over 27 and a half years. So basically what you see is your passive income doesn't affect your taxes as much because you claim depreciation on your Schedule E on your taxes. So let's say you get $2,000 a month and you're depreciating $1,000 a month from just the depreciation of the property, then it's only showing an active income basically of $1,000 a month. And that's not even before we include expenses. So if we go back to our income and expense model and we say we're net cash flowing $400 on a property, $2,000 rents, that's the income coming in, $1,000 principal, interest, taxes, insurance, $100 for maintenance and repairs a month, $100 for CapEx, and $100 for vacancy a month. So let's just say that's our average, that's $1,300. We get $2,000 in rent, we bring in $700. Now, depreciation likely wipes out that other $700. So it's almost like getting very close to being non-tax, like the income's not going to be taxed. So depreciation is a massive benefit for a homeowner, particularly a homeowner who is renting the property out. Now, a couple other things. So we have depreciation, we have cash flow. Here are two other really powerful wealth building tools when it comes to being a homeowner versus a renter. The other one is called appreciation. If you look at the real estate market over a 30-year period, the same way you'd look at a stock market, at the end of the day, you see an upward trajectory. Those properties are going to be worth more in 30 years than they are worth today. Now, they may absolutely go down in a recession. They may revert back to the mean. It may take all 30 years for you to gain any equity at all, depending on your market. There's a lot of factors at play. But at the end of the day, if you look at the history of the real estate market, the values of the properties have went up over a 30-year period. Any 30-year period you look at, there is appreciation. We don't count on appreciation, though, because we don't control it unless we're forcing appreciation through rehab. So that is just a benefit that you get of being a homeowner. The other benefit, and one that I love so dearly, is the fact that we get something called debt pay down. Now, if I have $1,000 of principal, interest, taxes, insurance, or a mortgage payment, and I put a renter in there that's paying the entire mortgage down, that property over time starts to become less and less and less and less and less debt. So imagine this. You buy a house for $100,000 and it's fixed up, it's in good condition, and you're able to rent it for $1,800. And you're cash flowing $100 or $200 a month. So you're collecting anywhere from $1,200 to $2,400 a year net to you. Doesn't seem like a lot of money. That's okay. Stay with me for a second. And let's say that house appreciates over 20 years to be worth $150,000. Now you bought it, you're all in for $100. Now it's worth $150. You've gained $50,000 of equity. Over 20 years on a 30-year loan, you're probably paid down to about, I don't know, $25,000, maybe less of what you owe the bank. So now you have $25,000 of debt. The house is worth $150,000. That means you have $125,000 worth of equity. Here's the catch. When you sell that property, your cost basis is $100,000. When you sell it for $150,000, minus all the expenses of selling the property, the closing costs and all that, let's say you show a net gain of, say, $35,000. In reality, you really are making about 100 to 125, but that's all, that's not part of your cost basis. So you're only being taxed on like $35,000 worth of money. You're getting the rest of the money back. Now, of course, I know you're going to pay some depreciation recapture. So when every year when you collect that cash flow nearly tax-free, the government is going to want that back if you do sell that property. So there will be depreciation recapture. Okay, so that's a benefit of being a homeowner that is a landlord. Now, what are the other things that are that play a factor in this? So what if I don't want to be a landlord and it's $3,800 to rent that property that you talked about earlier, Adam, but it's $5,000 a month to own that property? Well, even that property, which is in the path of progress and it's brand new, is likely to appreciate significantly over time. So that's one. If that property, say in the next 10 or 15 years, were to double in value, be worth $1.5 million, or you know, it's about $700,000 house worth, you know, $1.4 to $1.6 million. Now you have a ton of equity that you can either sell the property and capture that equity, or you can leverage a home equity line of credit, which is not an option that renters have. Still a benefit, even if it's not cash flowing, or even if you end up living in it, it's your personal residence. The other benefit to owning a property yourself, and particularly if it's a personal residence, is you get the best lending possible. You get the best mortgages on personal residences. You can use an FHA loan, put 3% down. You can use a conventional 20% loan and put 20% down. Or if you're a veteran, you can use a VA loan and basically be in the house for no money at all. Goodness, if it goes to 1.5 million, that would be amazing equity gain. Okay, so you have that as a factor, as a benefit to being a homeowner. One of the other benefits to being a homeowner is is peace of mind. So you pick the house that you end up buying, typically in a location that you want to be in, and with all the things that you want to have in that property, all the amenities, the neighborhood that you want. And sometimes as a renter, especially if you want to be in a really nice neighborhood that has great schools for your kids, as an example, sometimes as a renter, you don't have that option. And oh, by the way, you have no control as a renter. You can sign a one-year lease, and at the end of that lease, that homeowner can decide to move back into that property and not renew your lease, and now you are forced to uproot your family and move somewhere else. So there's another downside to being a renter, a bigger upside to being a homeowner from a flexibility perspective. Okay, on the renter side, there is also kind of a lifestyle factor to this. Listen, I know that being a homeowner is a lot of work. You got to cut the grass, you got to fix things, you're the one responsible. If I'm renting the property, maybe I have to cut the grass, maybe that's included. I don't have to fix things. I can call people to do that, and I can choose properties to rent that are low or no maintenance. I just want to live my life, work and do what I'm doing, and I don't want to have to think about the property. That's an upside benefit to being a renter. Now, you know, renting a home, you still have to bring money. Now, I know buying a home is hard because the down payments have rose about 12% in the past year. I think the average down payment for property is about $35,000 nationwide now, and it's up from about $32,000. So that price is going up. But you're not scot-free as a renter either. Because if you want to rent a really nice house in a really nice neighborhood, say for $3,000, most landlords are going to ask for at least 1 month's rent up front, plus a security deposit. That's $6,000 out of your pocket. And oh, by the way, some landlords are asking for 2 months of rent, first and last month. So that's $6,000 plus the security deposit equal to 1 month's rent. That's $9,000 just to rent a house for the year. Then if you have animals, you're going to pay more money. You don't have that freedom. And if you make, if you do something to the house, like you put a hole in the drywall, you don't take good care of it because that's why you're renting. You don't want to spend a lot of time taking care of a house. Well, that is going to come out of your deposit at the end, and it's going to cause it, it can put financial strain on you and when you want to get into your next property. Okay. Now, this is like extremely market dependent on whether or not renting or buying is more beneficial or worse. It's cheaper to rent than it is to buy. This is where the market matters. If you're in a high cost of living area, say a big metro in Florida or in California, and the price tag of the home is going to be exponential. So let's say in California, you're probably not renting too many places over $4,000 a month, but the purchase price of the properties are like from $1 to $3 million. Well, $4,000 a month isn't going to cover the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance in California on a $1 or $2 million property. That is probably going to be close to $6,000 or $7,000 a month for PITI, as compared to the $4,000 a month in rent. So in a high price market like that, it may actually be cheaper to be a rental. Now, if that house is a $4,000 rental in that expensive market, you're likely going to have to bring a significant amount of money just to get into that rental. First month's rent, some type of security deposit, potentially last month's rent. I mean, that could be like $10,000 or $12,000. And for those who are struggling to buy a property and it's cheaper for them to rent, a lot of times $12,000 is hard to come into to put one down payment down just to rent a property for a year. If you're in a Midwestern market where the average price of a property is, say, $150,000, the rents, it is not uncommon for rents to range from $1,000 to $3,000 nationwide. It's probably in the $2,000 range nationwide. So if you're in a market where buying a property is, the rents are 1% or close to 1% of purchase prices, it's going to be more beneficial typically to buy those houses. So don't listen to the headlines. Don't watch the headlines. Do your work. Look at where you live. Is it an extremely expensive market that the barrier to get into a property is extremely high? Or are you in an affordable market where you can get into a property for $150,000, $250,000, even $300,000? Now, nationwide, the average price of a property is right around $400,000. So if you look at that compared to the average rents, which are in the 2000s, and a lot of places, it's right there on the fence of whether or not it's cheaper to rent versus to own the property. But don't forget, over the long term, we don't want to look at our financial decisions in a short timeline. We want to consider them over a long timeline, just like if you were investing in stock. So if it's close, but owning the property, I can get some appreciation, I can get some debt pay down, I could potentially rent it in the future and get a little bit of cash flow, that is going to be significantly more powerful than potentially renting. Now, nothing is ever black and white. The media is designed to create a dichotomy between two things. This is better than that. This is bad. This is good. Everybody's situation is going to be different. Every market's going to be different. So thank you guys for jumping on with me today to tackle this renter nation versus home buyer nation. And if you guys have not checked us out on our YouTube channel or any of the other stuff we're putting out at sevenfigureflipping.com, I highly recommend you go check it out. There's tons of amazing free tools for you. And if you want the book, an amazing book, Seven Figure Flipping Underground, you can check that out, 7ffbook.com. You can get a free copy. You only pay shipping. Thank you so much. This was awesome. See you next time.